Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 298 of the Roguecast, recorded July 21st, 2020. Come pal around with Rorschach. And we're back with another installment of our bi-weekly podcast.
Yeah, it's everything's just squirrely right now.
Also, the intro might still say weekly, because it's a canned intro. So if it says that, that is Randy, Dave, and Nick of the past lying to you.
Yes. Mentally undo that.
Yeah.
Go and edit your memory if you can.
Yeah. Also, for this week, and the next week, mentally edit Nick out because it's just me and Dave. Because with COVID, we can only basically get two of us distance at a time in this room to record.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if we ever actually mentioned that to people, that's sort of the reasoning behind
this. That's why there's only two of us.
Although, am I correct that I'm going to swap out a little later on for Nick because he might talk about something?
That's right. When that happens, mentally edit Dave out and Nick back in.
Man.
The plan is, unless we run out of time, for me and Nick to talk about some pop culture stuff.
Yep. Now, I believe this week is, like, laden with news.
It is.
It's weird because we were talking about this off mic that, you know, so many things are delayed production right now.
Yep.
But there's still lots of announcements happening and wheels moving on certain projects.
You know what it is, Dave?
What is it?
You remember Simpsons when Krusty is forced to show I think it's like the Itchy and Scratchy cartoons where they're making peace and lemonade.
Yeah.
And he's like, trust me, kids. We got some really good commercials coming up next.
Yeah, they're toy ads.
That's what this is. It's they're like, look, I know we're not making any movies right now.
Yeah.
But trust us that there's going to be movies and stuff.
I would certainly like to think so. Other countries may be enjoying them while we burn, but...
Yes, yeah.
but something will occur.
We're going to have a weird flip of things where usually it's like American movies are bootlegged on the streets of China and all that kind of stuff. We're basically going to be, all the American movies that are showing overseas will be here bootlegged on the streets.
I did hear something, and I don't know if this was just somebody speculating or whatever, but like Tenet could get like a European release.
The craziest thing.
And that's one of those things where it's like, everybody knows his movies have kind of twisty, turny stuff and like, not twist endings, but they can have big notable things that happen at the endings of his movies. And they were trying to figure out if they were going to have to, like, hide from that information.
Here's the thing. If they decide to do that, they might as well release it in video on demand in America, because nobody's going to... It'll wind up pirated immediately.
It's true. I imagine that they would work out something like that, but this is so made for sort of a big screen thing, obviously, that I think they'll hold out a little bit more.
I did see that Tenet has been indefinitely delayed. Like,
yeah.
They moved its release date like 3 or 4 times, and finally they're like, we don't know when it's coming out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's what's going on, is that basically they're like, no, we're still going to make movies, we're still going to make TV. Don't give up on us, kids.
Yes. Everything is just going to come out as cartoons now.
This week was the first week in a while that it's felt like a real comics week. There's a lot of comics this week.
I mean, we had a few other big weeks in there.
We've had one week that I found to be a big comic week. For me, there was a lot of stuff this week to read, which is not the way it's been the last few weeks.
Yeah. I'm going on pure numbers. I remember one week where we got
That was the other week.
There
was one week that was like, oh, we're back normal, and then we slid back down into the sort of quieter. But there's a bunch of stuff this week. A lot of new number ones.
Yep.
Marvel's got an event going. DC kind of has an event going with their Batman stuff. And so, yeah, we're kind of getting a little bit back to normal this week. Also, store-related, there's a couple things. One is that the new D&D book, Mythic Odysseys of Theros, after a delay related to COVID production, is finally out. So we have this...
Makes it sound like they were producing COVID.
They are producing COVID.
They should go ahead and stop that make more D&D books.
No, they were like... Look, we're a diverse company. We make Magic the Gathering. we're Hasbro, so we produce a lot. Like, I'm sure Hooks and Ladders is theirs.
Yeah.
Hooks and Ladders? Shoots and Ladders.
Shoots and Ladders. But also Coronavirus?
But also Coronavirus. We experimented it, and it went viral.
Jesus. This is a dark episode.
They're all dark episodes
Oh,
now.
Right. I forgot. We're in Terminator future. What were we talking about?
How we're all doing.
Right. But there's a lot of comics to talk about this week. A lot of stuff's there.
But I was talking about the Mythic Odyssey of Theros.
Mythic Odyssey of Theros.
You interrupted me to talk about how they're producing COVID, and then I went on a tangent.
Yeah, so Mythic Odyssey of Theros is a new setting for D&D that's based on a magic one of their worlds.
And it's like unapologetically Greek. Based on Greek myth. Like,
right.
It is very much like, here is the... It was the Trojan War.
Right.
And Modysseus.
Right.
It is really very much the Greek myth RPG.
If you want to do a Perseus, Jason and the Argonauts, Hercules kind of stories.
Yeah.
Where humans interact with gods and monsters and stuff that are in that style, this is the one.
They do some cool stuff. They add some backgrounds. Everybody's got a heroic destiny, so you get like these... little heroic abilities.
That's cool.
There's a lot of in touch with the gods kind of stuff. They go deep into the pantheon, and they've got new races like the Leonins, or like their lion people.
Nice.
So yeah, it's good, and it has a spectacular variant cover. Like,
yeah, it's a great variant cover. The interiors look good, and for a little limited time while you're picking it up, you can get a cool map thing with it too.
I also want to mention this is an older game, not super old, but a little older, that we finally got in from our distributor, and that is Role Player. R-O-L-L,
uh-huh.
Which is basically a dice-building game where you build characters. So you, like, you roll dice.
So it's like a dice game to build RPG characters?
Yes, yeah.
Literally to make them
use. No, not to play, but you could.
Right, but that's the premise, is to have the game built around the fun of building a character.
There are cards that give you traits like courageous and honorable and that kind of stuff. There are cards that give you weapons and armor.
And are you trying to...
All this leads you to have victory points at the end, and the person who builds the best character gets the most points.
Is it like the equivalent of like what's the rail game from Days of Wonder, famous rail game?
Ticket to Ride. I'm curious where you're going with this.
In Ticket to Ride, you have essentially recipes for rail lines that you have to build. And when you accomplish them, you get points.
It's similar to that. You'll have...
So I was like, in other words, do you have like a character build that only you secretly know about that you're working towards?
No, everybody can see what you're working towards.
Oh, interesting.
So you have the cards are different races, and those give you a bonus to different stats.
Yep.
And then you randomly draw dice to see which character class you get.
Mm-hmm.
And each character class is like flip-sided. So if you draw a white die, then you're going to be either a cleric or a paladin. You can choose which one.
Okay.
And then they have stats that you're supposed to hit. And you get, like, if you get their biggest stat, like, I think if you got wisdom as a cleric, you get 4 victory stars.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get the intelligence star, you get 1 star.
Mm-hmm.
If you get, like, all 6 of them, that's a lot of points. So it's basically you're trying to use the dice to make your stats.
Yeah.
And then you're also getting gold that you're using to buy weapons, equipment, traits, abilities, like lockpicking and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. And
that's
there's
cool.
You also get an alignment card, and if you build toward the alignment that you're supposed to build toward, you get bonus points there, too.
That's cool. Is this one of those kind of... I assume all dice games are, like, 30-minute games or...
It's a pretty quick play, yeah. It reminds you a little bit of what we like about Call to Adventure, which is a little more storytelling-ish, but this is a little more dice-building, but it's a lot of fun. We're out of it right now, but we should be getting later this week. We'll get the main game, the expansion, and a cartographer standalone that they did.
And what's it called?
Role Player.
Okay, I get it.
So, yeah. And then this weekend is weirdly free RPG day.
Yeah.
So we decided to loosely participate this year. We, of course, don't want the usual crowds, so we're not doing any sort of gaming.
Yeah.
But there's a decent selection of stuff. What we're doing is basically people can email or call or whatever in... and get 3 books set aside for themselves.
Yep. A lot of people have done it.
A lot of people have done that. We're also going to do, first come, first serve. You can come and get three things. And then on Monday, whatever's left, we will sort of throw out to the masses.
In the off chance that just the way things tumble out, that a lot of people kind of come in simultaneously, we could hit our store cap of 12 people.
Yep.
And so if that should happen, be patient if we ask you to chill outside for a few minutes. It shouldn't be too long.
We'll do socially distanced lines outside. But honestly, I expect there'll be people coming throughout the weekend. So, yeah, there's some good stuff this year. I don't remember what all there is. There's a Pathfinder. There's a Starfinder.
Kids on Bikes.
There's a Root, the RPG, which I dig that game.
Mm-hmm.
It's a decent selection of stuff, which is one of the reasons we did it. It's like, it's a new company doing it. Like, it's someone else took it over.
Yeah.
And it's, like, their first year, which, oops, sorry, fellas.
Oh, man.
Not the best year.
But you know what? Come and get some of these games, and then go and play them on Zoom or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
That's the methodology does exist, and people have been figuring it out since the quarantine. So,
in fact, one of the offerings is a Roll20 Pro subscription for like 3 months,
huh?
Which I think gives you a little more access to building characters and stuff.
Nice. So, yeah.
All right, let's jump into this news because there's a lot of it. And I realize now I didn't arrange it. I usually put like the TV and movie news together.
Yeah.
It's just in order of when we heard about it.
So are we just going to go in crazy gobbledygook order?
Crazy gobbledygook order.
All right, let's do it.
So I just have a note here that says Hamilton Act 1, but it's the Muppets. What have you guys been doing while I wasn't on the last podcast. I don't know what happened.
You know what's funny? I believe that this was not a topic, but literally Anna just sent it to amuse us. You know, sometimes in our, we have a shared staff message thing going on. Yep. And now that I've cast my mind back, Anna was just like, look, y'all, you Hamilton freaks, this is funny. It is exactly what it sounds like. Anna asked, how long did I listen to it? And the answer was about a minute and a half or so. These are people just doing sound-alikes. It is not the actual Muppets.
Yeah.
It is just like, but you will know all the voices. You know, you picture Kermit doing the, like, I'm not giving away my shot.
Okay.
That kind of thing.
Yep.
But at some point, there's a solo, and it's Beaker. and Anna just wanted to know if I'd gotten to that. And I was like, I did get to that. And then I was like, that's pretty funny. All right, now I'm done. I don't want to listen to the remaining 8 minutes.
Anyway, I guess if you're tired of rewatching Hamilton... you can watch it done by the Muppets.
You got Muppet Fever.
Yeah. The Wolfman reboot, starring Ryan Gosling, has a director. That director is Invisible Man's Leigh Whannell, which none of those words sound interesting to me at first. Like, Wolfman reboot, Ryan Gosling, whatever.
Yeah.
Nobody's done a really great Wolfman movie in a while. Remember the Benicio del Toro one?
I never saw that one. The last one that I saw was the Jack Nicholson Wolf.
Oh, Jesus.
I kind of liked it. There, you know, like, all Wolfman stories are broadly these days about, like, either passive people or maybe, what do you call it? And Wolf, I know he was supposed to be a put-out-to-pasture getting a little old, right?
Well, there's only four Wolfman stories. There's Wolfman versus Wolf, Wolfman versus Man, Wolfman versus Nature, and Wolfman versus Self.
What about Wolfman versus Wolfsbane?
And Wolfman versus Mechagodzilla.
Yeah.
So there's six.
Now, am I correct in Wolf that he was basically like an older guy being put out to pasture by the young, like, yuppie shits in his company?
I've never seen Wolf.
Oh, it's a semi-okay movie.
Okay.
It's all right. Jack, I do believe that is the case. Jack Nicholson is like a guy who's kind of forced out of his company by like young corporate raider types.
Okay.
And at some point, I think the stakes escalate where they try and kill him. But this is a movie no doubt made by some guys who are middle-aged, who were going through their midlife crisis and were like, what if instead of having a midlife crisis and getting older, I became a wolfman?
What if instead of getting this Porsche and this younger wife, I became a wolfman?
Well... the fantasy of the, you know, because that is, they're all Wolfman stories, weirdly, are about you become cooler.
Yeah.
Teen Wolf is the other big one I'm thinking of. I guess sometimes they do view it as a curse, but that was in the 50s.
Yeah, now it's
nowadays,
great.
Transformation and transformative ideas are a bigger thing. And actually, I do think that will play into this version.
Yeah.
So Leigh Whannell, of course, did the recent Invisible Man thing, and that was a very fascinating rethink of it.
That's what's got me interested in it, because Invisible Man was really good.
Yeah. And Leigh Whannell, for people who haven't followed, he also did... he wrote, like, the first few Insidious movies. Or actually, did he write all of them?
I don't know.
I think he wrote all of them and directed one of them after James Wan left. They've worked together.
Okay.
I think he wrote the original Saw, one good one.
Right, okay.
Actually, he might have even written some of the bad ones, too, though. and he did... What was that sort of cyberpunk...
Leigh Whannell got to eat.
What was that cyberpunky movie he did, like, a year or two ago?
Oh, was he the one who did...
Yes.
Not upload. It's has one word. Upgrade.
Upgrade. Yes, did do that.
Man, that was great.
Yeah. So he's a guy to pay attention to.
Yeah.
Ryan Gosling, I have never particularly been drawn in by him or in his movies.
Is Ryan Gosling the guy who's in that in Drive?
He was in Drive. He was in Blade Runner 2049.
I liked him in that.
And
he was in The Nice Guys with Russell Crowe, the Shane Black one.
Oh, I never did see that.
He was good in that.
Okay.
So He's not bad. I like him. He's
right.
Just,
I agree with that. And you know, he was in La La Land.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
It was
too.
Okay.
Hey, it turns out I like Ryan Gosling. And Wolfman. I guess I like Wolfman, too.
I find him perpetually bland.
I get that.
But I do think I at least see enough craft in there that I'm open-minded about it. And Leigh Whannell is the bigger thing for me. That means
me
that
too.
It's good, that I think that there's going to be a real new angle on this, and it's not going to be just a tired... One more Wolfman.
Leigh Whannell's what got my interest. That's what got me to say, oh, well, this is kind of seems interesting. So.
There was a movie that came out in the 90s, I think, called Ginger Snaps, like a Canadian horror movie.
Okay.
That had two teenage girls who get the sort of werewolfism as a kind of a loose allegory for, like, the terror of puberty sometimes.
Right.
And it's a really well done movie. Like, it's kind of a thoughtful and unusual kind of indie horror movie. And that I remember, at least as far back as that, got me thinking about like the kind of different stories you might tell with that, with werewolves. So yeah, we'll see what he does.
So the next big news is that Batwoman has found its new lead.
Oh yeah,
Javicia Leslie, I think Javicia. I'm not sure which. She's going to play a new character called Ryan Wilder, who is a likable, messy, goofy, and untamed. Nothing like Kate Kane. She spent years as a drug runner, dodging the GCPD and masking her pain with bad habits. Today, she lives in her van with her plant. She would steal milk for an alley cat and also kill you with her bare hands. The most dangerous type of fighter, highly skilled and wildly undisciplined. She's an out lesbian, athletic, raw, passionate, fallible, and very much not your stereotypical all-American hero. This sounds like the sides that were sent to whoever auditioned to play her. But this is kind of cool.
Yeah, I So this is all because what's the actress who's
Ruby Rose quit.
Ruby Rose quit for reasons not completely known. Although there's lots of surmises, but for one way or another, they had to cast either replacement Batwoman, and you know, I think people have said, oh, they should have just recast her, and I'm like, no. That would have been so weird.
Yeah,
is it literally another person playing her? Like, yes, you could have done it, but what I think this was ended up being a better idea.
I think the easy miss here would have been to cast basically just another white girl lesbian.
Right.
And I think making it an African-American character is a huge, notable change, and important, because there aren't that many African-American, right, especially female characters.
Right.
And as a result, I'm hoping this will translate into the comics. Like, I know everybody loves Kate Kane. I know that were Anna in this room, she would strangle me right now for even having the thought that Kate Kane would be replaced. But I'm like, no, this is a good idea for a character. I like this idea.
Yeah. I don't know much about this actress who's, like, only been in, like, kind of odds and ends.
She was in God Friended Me.
Like, like a lot of CW actors, like, I suspect they probably have some raw charisma going on. The talent, you know, what do you call it? Casting director is probably looking for somebody who has, you know, this energy they can bring to it, but you want them to be able to become the role, and so you don't necessarily want to use people who are super well known.
Right.
And just going by the photos I've seen of her, she looks like she's kind of got the energy and the CW, like, she's right, kind of got the CW looks in that she's very pretty.
Yeah.
But she also has a little bit of energy going on because she got a cool big afro.
Yep.
She looks like she's ripped. I think I read she does, like, all this martial arts stuff.
Ah, okay.
So she also has the physicality for the role. Whether she has the acting chops or, you know, whether they will write the character well, you know, who knows? CW's still CW. They still have some goofy stuff. and sometimes that's the quality, that's the drive. What I think would be interesting is, I guess she's going to inhabit the same Gotham that Kate Kane was in, right?
Yes.
Like, then probably so, I assume, like, the villains will stay some of them the same.
Yeah, I assume as well.
Yeah, and in some way, shape, or form, she's maybe even going to pick up Kate Kane's legacy.
Right.
Like, she's going to be like, that woman's disappeared, and somehow she will fall into that role, or maybe be asked even by her off-screen.
Right.
But yeah, I got good vibes off of what I read about her.
Same. This one, Dave, I know let's talk about the other Batman news. So that is, they're doing a Batman TV spinoff on HBO Max, which is kind of weird because that's where the DC stuff is going. From film director Matt Reeves and Terrence Winter, who I believe was the responsible part of Boardwalk Empire.
Okay.
I know the name at any rate. Oh yeah, Boardwalk Empire and Sopranos. It is supposed to be about the cops, which has people being like, ah, it sounds like Gotham Central. And I'm like, it sounds like about the cops of Gotham, but Gotham Central is a very specific thing.
Right, that's an Ed Brubaker, Greg Rucka procedural.
So it's going to be basically a spinoff from the Batman movie.
Right.
No casting or anything. It's interesting to
have a formal tie-in, TV show tie-in to a movie that's going to be, well, if not simultaneous with it, pretty close to it.
I think you and I, Dave, were both probably like, hey, maybe not the best time to be doing a cop show right now, but...
Right.
Okay.
Gotham's a little bit different, and that may actually kind of be to its advantage in that it kind of is clearly an unusual fantasy land.
My other question is, I mean, Gotham was supposed to be this, right? Gotham was really supposed to be about cops and then just became bonkers.
Yeah, it was largely about the villains.
Is the same thing going to happen to the Batman TV show? Is it going to start off being about the cops and then eventually like, oh, but people really love our weird-ass Mr. Freeze?
That I don't know. And, you know, that's, I guess, like the comic did it. Yeah. The comic had interesting stuff with the villains, but it was always really from the perspective of Montoya and Bullock and, oh man, I suddenly can't say the name of Montoya's partner. Crispus.
Oh, yeah.
Allen?
Crispus Allen, yeah.
Yeah.
And all the other characters.
And all these other characters, yeah. It's definitely its own thing. I have no idea, and I guess nobody else does right now. I don't know if I even want it to quite be like Gotham Central, which is might for TV be boring because it still was a procedural.
Yeah.
But it was a procedural where it's like, you know, in the first few pages of the first issue, some cops are just like, okay, let's follow up on a lead. Let's go ask some questions at this door. They open the door. They've inadvertently stumbled into, like, Mr. Freeze's, like, where he's, like, holed up or something.
Yeah.
And he just freezes and, like, kills both of them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Or, like, one of them loses an arm and the other one dies or something like that. Like, it's really horrific. And they kind of are like, this is Gotham. This is what life is in Gotham.
Right.
I think that's a pretty potent premise if they were to go through with it. But I also don't know what the vibe of this movie is going to be like. I've heard it's going to be a detective story. It's going to be grim and gritty. It's not a superhero story.
Yeah.
But... you know, everybody kind of says that about their Batman movies. Sometimes they're more superhero-y than others. And I don't have a good sense of this one yet until I see the trailer. But, you know, I guess I'd say cautiously interested.
I like Doom Patrol on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And I like Stargirl on CW.
Yes.
So it's possible that despite my general hatred of everything DC right now, that I might enjoy this.
You would, I think, have to say that you loved Gotham Central as a comic back when.
I did, but DC is dead to me right now, so I can't really say that now.
you know, here's one thing I was wondering is, like, I never want, like, a direct translation, like, and I don't think they really even do that anymore, like, but, like, I don't want the exact storylines from Gotham Central done.
No,
exactly,
I
beat
either.
For beat or anything. Like, I don't want full adaptations. Yeah. They have to play to TV strengths.
I want them to just make The Wire, but set in Gotham.
Just every once in a while, Batman swings by out the window.
Yeah, but I want it to be actually The Wire. I want it to be those characters.
Yeah, sure.
That's those. Just redo those stories.
Yeah,
but in Gotham.
Yeah, do you see G.I. in some Gotham smokestacks or something like that?
Yes, just every now and then, Mr. Freeze walks by.
Penguin is just like, wah.
Yeah, they're just gonna basically remaster The Wire. It's because it's HBO Max, it makes sense, HBO. And they'll be like, it's like, hey, Bunk, I think this was done by, in a completely different voice, the Penguin!
You know that scene where they say the F-bomb like 100 times?
Yeah.
The Penguin just goes by the window there and he does this.
Yeah, to make it less R-rated.
Yeah. Every time they say the F-bomb, he went.
Yes.
He gives it the little Affleck.
Anyway, this is why no one should put us in charge of TV.
Yeah. What else do we got?
All right, so Dave, you've talked about this on your podcast, Tech Trek.
Yep.
Which apparently is like a big hit because we've had several customers mention it to
us. They keep on talking it up.
Yeah.
I think part of it is there's a bit of Trek zeitgeist going on. They did just release the trailer for probably what we're going to talk about.
Star Trek Lower Decks, yes.
Star Trek Lower Decks, but there's also like a Deep Space Nine comic that hit last week.
Yep.
We got some Star Trek masks in for that have like the next generation look
that's
on
true.
It.
Yep.
And I happened to be wearing my Star Trek Discovery shirt yesterday, so it's just like it was in the air.
Yes.
So Star Trek Lower Decks is an animated show from one of the co-creators of Rick and Morty.
Yep.
And it's loosely actually keying off an old Next Generation episode that was called The Lower Decks.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was actually about, like, a trio of, like, officers who worked the Lower Decks and who one of them actually gets killed by the end of the episode. They kind of go on, like, a special mission for, I think even Picard asks them to do, and they end up getting killed. And I think the premise was to show that everybody like plays an important role on, you know, Star Trek, even if you're not the bridge crew.
Okay.
Now this is going to Star Trek Lower Decks is about the people kind of doing the dirty work, cleaning out the carbon scoring on the engines, removing waste disposal stuff from the holodeck.
Taking care of all the dead hookers that Worf killed.
It's set, actually, the weird thing is, like, there's there's kind of a continuity to this. Like, it's there. I think they want to be quasi-canonical, even though the ads look kind of Rick and Morty-ish, the trailer did. Like, it is set after Star Trek Nemesis, very specifically. They've invented a new class of ship, and they use a lot of the iconography of Star Trek in it. So let me ask, though, before I say anything else, Randy, you watch this trailer. Yep. You're not necessarily as invested in it as I am.
Nope.
In Trek in general, but you like Trek.
I do.
What was your take?
I was a little bit, and Dave, you're usually very careful about this, but you buzzkilled me a little bit, because when you posted about it, you were like, I don't know if, he's like, this looks okay, but I don't know if I like it. And so I was going in prep for a little bit of a disappointment, and I think my general take was, well, either disappointment or, Dave's crazy. And what I found interesting was I landed kind of where you were. I'm like, I like Rick and Morty quite a bit.
Yeah.
I think it's funny, and it's actually got more depth than just the dumb humor. Like, a lot of people like it on a surface level.
Right.
And there's all the dumb people who want to just harass McDonald's workers over sauce or whatever.
Right.
You know, it has a terrible fan base in a lot of ways.
Right.
But it's got some stuff to say about sort of like how hard it is to be intelligent and some of that kind of stuff mm-hmm. that I think is very poignant, even though it's also filled with dumb dick jokes, basically.
Right.
And I think my hope is that Lower Decks can do the same thing. And based on watching this, I'm like, oh, there's a little bit of heart here. Like, I feel like they're not completely punking out these characters. Like, they want the characters to be likable.
I think so, too.
And the watchword for me is Orville. Because Orville has that dumb dick and fart sense of humor.
Yep.
But it also was able to do sort of classic next-gen Trek-type stories.
Right. It could be very sincere, and they told some stories that actually had some like, timeliness.
Yeah.
And some heart to them, like you were saying. What I was remembering, Randy, is that we both ended up liking the Orville, but we're both really pretty skeptical early on.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And the trailers, I feel like, did not cast it in the best light for what we wanted.
I agree.
They posted, they were mostly the dumbest jokes in it, and they didn't show any of the sort of more dramatic scenes.
Right.
And so what's a lot of the things in the about my appreciation for Lower Decks will hinge on, you know, can they do some drama? Is there some character depth beneath it all? I kind of think there is, based on what the creators have been saying, but the trailer didn't show that.
Yeah, I get that.
So there's some funny stuff in there. There's some stuff that didn't land for me. For me, the funniest joke is one where the chick who's like an engineer, but clearly is kind of the, I'm going to say, like a slacker type chick. And there's another guy who's like this go-getter, wannabe, you know, command program officer.
Mm-hmm.
And the two of them, I think, are going to be the kind of quasi-leads. And they're clearly friends, and she gives him hell. But he's also kind of goofy. He's like making wannabe captain's logs in the nude and when people walk in on him.
Yes.
At the end, she like blasts him with a phaser. And I think there's, like, what, there's, like, now I'm forgetting it. There's some shield or something that, like, blocks it. And he's like, oh, my God, you tried to shoot me. And she's like, no. She's like, it's set on. And then she looks at the phaser and she, like, clearly clicks it. And she's like, stunned. It's set on stun.
Yes.
anyway, there were some good gags like that. Basically, it's enough to interest me. And I do think they're doing a virtual convention this weekend that's like their San Diego Comic Con. What would have been their San Diego Comic Con thing.
San Diego Comic Con stuff this weekend.
And so I feel like there may be even some more follow-up. I don't think there will be another trailer or anything yet, but we may find out some more about it and other Trek news. But
what's kind of crazy about this is the trailer dropped, and it's coming in August. Like
It's August 6th.
They did not give us, like, they gave us, like, 3 weeks. Hey, by the way, here's this coming in three, like, I'm shocked we didn't see the trailer before now.
I am, too. That's a little bit crazy to me, but it's also kind of, in these times, it's kind of cool because this is something that, honestly, if they needed to, they could probably record remotely.
Yep.
They could score, I suspect, remotely, although I heard that was a problem with Discovery, because you generally do need the orchestra together.
Right. Yeah.
And that was, like, all they had left to do
on
Discovery.
Let me suggest, get Harold Faltermeyer from the 80s.
Okay.
And you can do the whole thing on his keyboard.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is.
From Beverly Hills Cop?
No.
That's
like he scored that?
Yeah.
Okay. No, if they're not Giorgio Moroder, I don't know their electronica.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Get one man with a keyboard, and that's just the new sound for all TV going forward.
You know, they could also get that guy from, is he still alive, the Police Academy voice guy?
Oh, yeah, Michael Winslow?
Yeah, Michael Winslow.
Or between the two of them. One-man band.
Yeah, also the guy who did the Seinfeld.
Right, that's a one part. That's a one man thing, right?
It was a one man show. He did it all on his synthesizer thing.
All music in the future will be either Seinfeld, Harold Faltermeyer, or Michael Winslow making mouth noises.
Again, this is why we're not hired.
No, Dave, we're going to save Hollywood post-COVID with our bold ideas.
Our ideas are about as good as Michael Keaton's ideas in Night Shift. He promoted himself as an idea man.
Yeah.
He wanted to mix like tuna fish and mayonnaise right in the can.
Yep, yep.
He also wanted to secretly run a brothel out of a morgue.
Right. I would say that putting CGI or voiceover Gotham into The Wire is the equivalent of mayonnaise and tuna in the same can.
Yeah.
I would say that making all music those three options is the equivalent of running hookers out of a morgue. So we are Michael Keaton from Night Shift.
Wow, I didn't expect you to run with it, but pretty neat. By the way, for those who haven't seen it, Night Shift was the first movie of Ron Howard, who became like America's like fresh-faced, you know, director of Tom Hanks movies.
Yeah, Opie grew up, made a hooker movie, and then went on to become America's sweetheart.
Yeah, yeah. But I do recommend Night Shift, which has some heart to it. And a, like, weirdly, Henry Winkler, fresh out of Happy Days at the time, plays this kind of sad sack who gets walked all over by everybody in it.
And you remember the girl is?
It's Shelley Long.
Shelley Long.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not good, yet of Cheers.
Good movie. Yeah. If I remember, also probably means there's some stuff in it that's very much doesn't hold up
oh,
now.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And feels wildly politically incorrect, misogynistic.
Right. It's, oh, I'm sure. Yes.
Anyway, but it had more heart than it had any right to.
Anyway, in the genre of guy becomes pimp by accidentally, it ranks above Dr. Detroit. Starring Dan Aykroyd.
Was that also going on in Risky Business?
Might have been.
I think that was...
That might have been a thing in the 80s. A lot of... I feel like there was another one, too. There's a lot of, like, guys accidentally...
A lot of white kids were like... What, or directors, at least, were like, what if I became a pimp?
What if I was became a pimp?
Night Shift was... what do you call it? Risky Business was also a good movie.
It was.
All right. Let's move
Detroit
on.
Was not.
Yeah, I believe that's what memory serves.
But if you were to remake Dr. Detroit, but you just put Dr. Doom in there, again, great idea. It is the mixing the tuna fish and the mayo right in the can.
Yeah, yeah. Castle Latveria is a really ideal place for brothel.
Yes. Moving on. Dave, I don't know if you... Did you watch any of the Clone Wars, the latest season?
No.
You've not seen
I haven't seen Clone Wars since, like, season 5
oh, man.
Or something.
So you have not seen The Bad Batch.
No, but I know a little bit about them.
They're like clones that were created a little different. Like, one of them's a big hulking dude. One of them's like a tactical genius. Like, they basically are, unlike all the other clones that are the same, these guys all had different strengths.
This is different from the kind of the loser group that was stationed on that far outpost. Right.
No, those guys were just clones. These guys are like, they are like badass Spec Ops clones.
Okay.
And they're called the Bad Batch because they didn't come out like everybody else.
Right.
They were introduced in the first arc of the last Clone Wars, which was supposed to be the last Clone Wars, but Dave Filoni cannot stay away from this universe. And so they just announced they're doing a Star Wars Bad Batch series on Disney Plus, which I am all for because they were interesting characters.
Is this going to be CG or is this going to be live action?
It's going to be CG. So yeah, I'm glad to see more of this universe. I thought the Clone Wars stuff wrapped really well. They actually went through and did basically a 3 or 4 episode arc where it showed what Ahsoka Tano was actually doing during Revenge of the Sith.
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like a side movie of what was going on with all the Clone Wars stuff, wrapping all that up. And it just gets better and better. And the Bad Batch were a fun group, so I'm excited about this.
Just I think most people probably do know Dave Filoni at this point, but he has moved on to directing or show running The Mandalorian,
along with Jon Favreau. Yeah,
yeah. So if you're liking Mandalorian, but you haven't watched any of the cartoon stuff. That's a glimpse of his quality. He is a talented guy. I used to, back in the Netflix sends physical copies of discs days, I was watching Clone Wars through that, and each of the discs came with, like, they had the extra material where he would talk about each episode. I do not normally do behind-the-scenes stuff, but I found Filoni was so interesting to hear talk about it.
Yeah.
That I always watched his little 10 or 15 minute little after episode things. I really like him, and I think I'm glad he's become a force to be reckoned
with.
What's
interesting is that this show, I haven't seen too much about it, but, you know, Filoni also, along with Greg Weisman, ran The Rebels, which was like the post-Clone Wars, pre-New Hope.
It's Rise of the Rebellion era,
it sounds like Bad Batch is going to take place in that same area. So these guys, probably because of
They'll have a bit of age, right?
Well, because of their weird genetics, I guess it's not quite that far, but because of their weird genetics, they probably didn't get Order 66.
Oh, interesting, yeah.
It says basically they are take on daring mercenary missions in the post-Clone Wars era. So, like, mercs in the, like, the Empire trying to, you know, tighten its grip and all that kind of thing. That's an interesting era. I'm interested to see where they go with that.
You know what's interesting? The in the Clone Wars movie that Lucas did as the prequel, like, it was kind of cool to finally have some good guy stormtroopers, which is really what the clones were more than anything else, as proto-stormtroopers. But, you know, really all they got was that one kind of scene where they did the big rescue in the arena and stuff like that. Yeah. And it was, like, kind of cool. But, like, the other people have done so much with it.
Saw them again, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, like, the Clone Wars cartoon is, like, that's, like, its main reason for existence. But so when it's not doing Jedi stuff, it's doing cool stuff with those guys. We would go on to have Finn in the new movies as an actual stormtrooper who kind of recanted.
Right.
And, yeah, they basically, all the coolest stuff was after Lucas left.
Yep, it's just kind of much.
Anyway, yeah, that sounds cool. Sounds like their own kind of Dirty Dozen, Spec Ops, Mission Impossible team.
Okay, this has been a news I'm shocked to see. Dave, you have not watched Old Guard. Nope. But Nick and I both didn't really enjoy it. Well, Old Guard, it's been fairly successful for Netflix. It is the Greg Rucka comic translated into a movie with Charlize Theron starring.
Immortal warriors who live as mercenaries?
Yes. So here's the interesting thing. Because Charlize Theron went to... This is all the weird COVID stuff. Because Old Guard went to Netflix, I think that was always the plan.
Mm-hmm.
But prior to this, back in 2017, she did a Cold War-era spy thriller called Atomic Blonde.
Right.
Which did you ever see?
No.
I loved it. I really enjoyed it.
This was generally a hit with my friends, but it was right around then that I was like, I'm kind of just getting tired of movies about mercenaries and hitmen and stuff. Yep. And so I skipped it. I think I'll probably enjoy it when I see it.
So it had great action. She was really good in it. And I think it did okay, but not great. And so the odds of doing a sequel, and by the way, also based on that comic, is based on an Anthony Johnston comic from Oni Press. They are going to do a sequel for Netflix. So they originally basically like said, no, we're not going to do any more. This didn't sell. But apparently, she was successful enough at Old Guard, mm-hmm. and she's one of the producers, and she liked the movie. Huh. So they're going to do Atomic Blonde 2 at Netflix.
That's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
That seems like a case of Netflix's powers being used for justice and Charlize Theron's her pull.
Yeah. Interestingly, the director of Atomic Blonde was the director debut of David Leitch.
Yeah.
Who is the uncredited co-director of John Wick, who directed Deadpool 2, and directed Fast and Furious Presents Hobbs and Shaw.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So he can do action.
Yeah.
So I'm excited about this. He's not doing Atomic Blonde 2, but I'm excited to see more of it. I actually really liked the first one.
I will watch the first one when the second one is about to come out.
That sounds about right. All right, let's talk... something that I think, Dave, that neither you nor I are particularly interested in.
I love these ones.
Man. I'm just going to apologize to the people who are excited about this, because I'm going to poop all over this. Rorschach.
Right, it's another comic.
The protagonist slash villain of Watchmen.
Yep.
The crazy right-wing Batman.
Yep. But admittedly, the character that almost everybody the first time they read it at least thought he was some stripe of awesome.
Right, yeah. And then you realize, oh no, he's a crazy person, and also a homophobe, and kind of a terrible person, even though he represents sort of the...
He represents the uncompromising objectivism of Ayn Rand, a.k.a. The Question, created by Steve Ditko, who was an objectivist.
Yep.
But also broadly the kind of the law and order mentality that I think Alan Moore saw as like, kind of having taken root in a lot of comic fans, which I think that's true. I think it was like I read comics as a kid, and I did sometimes think there's good and there's evil, and you know, good must punish evil or whatever, right? And that turns out to not be very applicable to the real world unless you're a crazy Gestapo person.
Well, despite Alan Moore's vociferous wishes against it,
yeah,
DC has finally decided to just full-on just do more Watchmen projects.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a 12-issue Black Label series from Tom King and artist Jorge Fornes.
12 issues.
Says it will take him deep into a dark conspiracy of alien invasions, distressed do-gooders, mystical visions, and yes, comic books. I'm going to go on a limb and guess that he's going to have an uneasy relationship with his own violent history.
Yes,
every literal thing that Tom King has written.
Yeah, Tom King seems to be doing a lot of coming to grips with his past as like a... Like, what was he, like an intelligence gatherer or something for CIA? I forget what he was, or some logistics guy or something.
Here's what Tom King has to say about this.
Okay.
Like the HBO Watchmen show, which, by the way, and very much like the original 86 Watchmen, by the way, that is the two highest bars to set for yourself.
Yeah.
This is a very political work. It's an angry work. We're all so angry all the time now. We have to do something with that anger. It's called Rorschach, not because of the character Rorschach, because what you see in these characters tell you more about yourself than them.
You know what? I actually think that that's a reasonable statement to make. We literally talked about how, like, people, you feel drawn to Rorschach the first time you see him. He does get a lot of cool lines and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then you kind of change in as far as how you reflect on him over the years. He still has a cool look. You can't go wrong with the suit, trench coat, hat, creepy mask.
Here's the thing. I don't have a principled objection to this. Like, I was fine with Before Watchmen.
Yeah.
But the problem is you got to put somebody on I'm interested in. And Tom King, for all the people love Mr. Miracle and Vision and Strange Adventures and his Batman run, I am not a fan.
They have not taken hold with us.
Yeah, this is going to be for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It is not for me. And I'm, like, if this was being done by, say, Jeff Lemire,
yeah,
I'd potentially be interested in it.
I generally would say I liked the 4-issue miniseries but didn't love it from Brian Azzarello and... who's that guy who draws all the wrinkles in clothes?
Eduardo Rizzo?
No.
Oh, Liebermejo.
Liebermejo.
Yeah.
I would have preferred Eduardo Rizzo. But Liebermejo was appropriate enough for... it was set in the
70s. I get that. Yeah.
It was interesting enough. If anything, it kind of downplayed the coolness of Rorschach. He got his ass beat a few times in it. But it is one of those that... I kind of feel like for my purposes, which is not DC's, DC just wants some money.
Yep.
That they did the Before Watchmen thing, and they did the weird Watchmen meets DC, which I haven't read. I know some people who liked it.
Yeah, I read an issue or two of it.
Yep. And they've done, a surprisingly good HBO show, which may be the strongest overall effort from all of these spinoffs.
Did you watch that?
What?
Watchmen.
Yes.
Okay, I thought you did.
Yeah, I had some somewhat mixed feelings about it towards the end, but there was a lot of greatness in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'd actually have to see it again to reflect on it a bit. But for sure, it was like more ambitious than almost any of the other projects could be.
Yeah,
it was one of the few that I think actually did try and match wits, as it were, with Alan Moore's original.
I agree.
As far as its scope and ambition and its themes and its depth and subtext and all that stuff.
Yeah.
That said, I did like the stories told, most of the ones told in Before Watchmen. But I guess what I was leading to is I kind of feel like I've got my fill. I know that that's not how, like, characters work that, no. You know, at a big corporation like Time Warner.
Right. Is they like, want to you know what? Squeeze. Just please stop with Batman. Stop with all the Batman for a while.
Yeah, it's not what they do, even if it's something as highly regarded as Watchmen. Tom King is, we may be the only ones who are not into his stuff, Randy.
Yeah. No, people like him. He seems to be a good writer for some people. He's not a good writer for me.
Yep.
So I don't know. I'm nonplussed.
12 issues is a long thing, though.
It is.
12 issues was the length issues. Of Watchmen.
Yeah.
And that was an ensemble piece.
Yep.
With the perhaps some of the most scope anybody has ever seen in a comic.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know that I really want to hang out with Rorschach for 12 issues. That's how they should bill it.
Yeah,
that's what ads. Hang out with Rorschach.
Come pal around with Rorschach.
Okay. What else do we got?
All right, so...
Who's the artist on this?
It's Jorge Forney.
Okay, somebody we don't know. It's and not his usual collaborator.
Yeah, not Mitch Gerads.
Okay.
Right? In the Mitch Gerads?
Possibly. Probably.
I don't remember. Anyway, this is what I'm excited about. The Samurai Rabbit, the Usagi Chronicles, is in development over at Netflix. Based on Sansa Kai's books. It is going to be a CGI series.
Okay.
It is going to follow the teenage rabbit samurai Yuchi descendant of the great warrior Miyamoto Usagi, on his epic quest to become a true samurai. He leads a ragtag team of misfit heroes, including a roguish bounty hunter, a cunning ninja, an acrobatic pickpocket, and a faithful pet lizard, as he battles depth-charging moles, metal-tipped winged bats, and monsters from another dimension, all in pursuit to become the best samurai Usagi. Now, this is interesting, because they're doing a futuristic thing, and they're not doing Usagi Yojimbo. Now, my hope would be...
Oh, wait, it is futuristic?
Yeah.
So this is, like, is this an adaptation of Space Usagi, which was his own...
No, because this is like a different character. It's named... He's Rabbit Samurai Yuchi.
Okay.
So it's like a complete... And, but, like, a roguish bounty hunter sounds like Gen.
Right.
A cunning ninja sounds like his friend. An acrobatic pickpocket. Like, all these sound like characters. Pet lizard is Takagi Lizards. Like, it sounds like they're doing an original series...
Yeah.
Based on ideas from Usagi. I'll be disappointed if there aren't flashbacks to Usagi if he's a descendant. I would like them to do some of the classic Usagi stories.
You know, I didn't know it was, like, futuristic. I guess I kind of thought it was... I thought it was going to be his descendant, but, like, you know, within, you know, like, 40 or 60 years of his lifespan.
No,
so that it would still be samurai stuff, but just, like, kind of from a different perspective.
It says modern high-tech images, so it seems to be at least modern. But all this stuff, like metal-tipped wing bats, that's from the comics.
Right, yeah,
like,
the ninja bats were a big thing.
So it sounds like they're maybe going a little bit more sci-fi. My worry is they've done a few of these animated things over on Netflix. Like, they did the Fast and Furious one, and they clearly aim it at kids.
Yeah.
And it kind of dumbs it all down. I'm worried that that's what they're doing.
They took a serious shot with the movie, and I ended up not watching all of it, of Watership Down.
Yeah.
But and they had a great voice cast, but the CG in it was kind of crap.
That's too bad.
And it seems like it ended up being just okay. So, yeah. On the other hand, what else? They produced Castlevania, which has been well-received, and I feel like there's at least one other one.
They've got Dragon Prince.
Yeah, Dragon Prince is great.
So there's good stuff. And, of course, they have, like...
Did they produce Voltron?
She-Ra, Voltron. They've got some good animation under their belt.
I guess it's the CG that I'm worried about.
Me too.
But we both love Usagi.
Yep.
Stan Sakai's settings are very fun. Some of my favorite things about Usagi is that even though it's filtered through this animal lens, is that it still was also filtering real Japanese history or real folklore.
Yeah.
And that'll kind of be out the door with this. But, you know, honestly, kind of for Stan's sake and for all of his fans' sake, I hope that they do it justice.
Me too.
I hope they at least live up to it.
I was more excited about the idea of them doing actually like a Usagi translation, but this will be interesting. I'll be curious to see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there's talk of a Fletch reboot. This is a...
Do people know what Fletch is who are not Russell Sinclair?
I don't know. So here's the thing. Fletch... is a series of novels, crime novels from the 70s.
Yep.
Like pulp crime novels. About an investigative reporter who keeps getting into, like, crime stuff.
Yep.
In the 80s, there was a movie and a sequel starring Chevy Chase as Fletch. And the gag was basically that he'd go undercover with various identities, and he always used, like, he called himself, there were dumb names, and
They comedied it up.
Yeah, they're very common. And
Randy, I've never read the books. What's the comedy level in them?
It's sardonic. I would say Elmore Leonard-esque.
Okay, but the movies definitely added a kind of a layer of a little more 80s slapstickery. Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I love the movies and the books,
but
they're totally different animals.
Right.
So there was talk, Kevin Smith was going to do Fletch 1, which was the story of like a year one Fletch, essentially.
Okay.
Or maybe it was his son, I don't know, but he was going to do one that had featured, I thought it was Ben Affleck, but I guess it was somebody else.
Okay.
That never happened. I found myself thinking about that the other day. Like, I kind of wish we'd seen that, even though Kevin Smith is not a director I like anymore.
It seems like it almost could be the thing for him.
Yeah. Instead, this reboot is from Superbad Director, which I liked Superbad, and I guess it holds up for people, is what I've heard.
Mm-hmm. I've not seen.
And it's going to star Jon Hamm. Now, Jon Hamm can do serious...
Is that dude from Mad Men?
Yeah. He can do serious and comedy. Like, he was hilarious on 30 Rock. He was hilarious on Kimmy Schmidt. Like, he's a funny dude, but also a classic actor.
Yeah.
And I totally think he's a good fit for Fletch, so I'm kind of excited about this idea.
What's the... Where's it appearing?
It's being developed.
As a TV for...
As a movie.
Movie,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that does sound interesting. I think we do live in an era when, you know, there's all these things sort of pandering sequels and things like that.
Yeah.
But they also will sometimes take something and do justice to a book now.
Yeah.
You know, like, arguably, I think, like, The Hunger Games and stuff like that had pretty decent justice. Harry Potter was a huge thing that had justice done to it. And even outside the YA stuff, they're always translating books and with reasonable degrees of success.
Right, yeah.
So I feel like, yeah, this actually would be a pretty good time for it,
yeah.
But for the COVID.
I would love to see if they could get it going as a series and be able to do every couple of years do a Fletch movie. Like,
that'd be
great.
Cool, yeah. Brandon, what makes this detective or reporter different from the rest?
I think the thing is, like, he's an investigative reporter, not a detective.
Okay.
There's not a lot of investigative reporters.
That is actually true. Yeah, you're right.
So that, I think, is the thing. All right, switching gears entirely, there's a movie coming from A24, which is one of the... They're like Blumhouse adjacent or something, right?
Yeah, did they... I'm trying to remember what they produced.
They did Midsommar. They did Hereditary. That's them.
Yeah, I think they are known for doing these sort of more boundary pushing horror. They were going to be producing, I think, that one that got delayed by COVID. What was that one that was about the girl who got into witchcraft and stuff like that?
Oh yeah, the one I saw the trailer for 100 times and freaked me out every time.
Yes, with the creepy foot thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, that I believe is also A24.
So they were set to release David Lowery's take on the story of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight, called The Green Knight.
Right, like a horror spin on a medieval Arthurian story.
We don't
know
when that's going to happen, but they're releasing a role-playing game based on the movie.
Yes.
Set comes with a GM guide with the rules, encounters, and bonus quests, a map, character sheets, and a D20. It comes out in August. It's $35, which is not cheap. But honestly... I almost want it, because they did this retro commercial. It's like 30 seconds on YouTube.
And it looks like those handful of 80s commercials that happen for, like, D&D. Yeah.
But it all looks cool. Like, they definitely want the retro D&D route.
What's funny is it actually works for COVID times. They're like, don't feel like going out? Like, stay in and play, you know, delve into the dungeon.
Yeah.
Definitely, you're going to want to look this up if you have ever seen those ads or have any fondness for them, or even just want to make retro fun of them. They did a really good job of this in their 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And I did see that there's, like, pre-gen characters in it that look like they have classes. What I'm wondering is, like, how much does the actual game resemble the movie? Like, it looks like it is an actual horror movie, so like...
Woods.
Like, will it feel Ravenloft-ish, I wonder?
Tim Woods, who is the game master who helped develop it, says that it's a game that roughly patterns after the film, but that's the starting point. They expect players who dip into the game will use the system to create their own adventures and continue to dabble in the world. So sort of a horror-tinged King Arthur world.
I mean, that sounds kind of cool to me. I like King Arthur crap. I guess I usually like it when it's kind of more sincere.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think, oh, I wish this would be put through a horror model. But I'm not against it. It's the kind of thing I can imagine seeing, like, a good, you know, cool movie with or a cool video game done.
Right.
So, yeah, like, if Mordred or whatever does, like, if his magic is and Morgana's magic are, like, real scary stuff, yeah, I could see it.
Yeah.
And as this game gets closer, which I guess if it's August, it's pretty close, I think I'd want to see a little bit more of, like, the contents of it.
Yeah.
You know, just hear a little bit about, like, what system they use and all. But, yeah, like you, Randy, I feel like I'd be tempted by it.
Yep.
One of us should get it.
all right. Keanu Reeves is coming to comics for a book from Boom called Berserker.
But it's spelled without vowels.
All capital letters. B-R-Z-R-K-R.
Yeah.
It's probably his code name or something. So he is listed as being in the writing room. It's a 12-ish limited series. He's co-writing with Matt Kent, who's done a fair amount of stuff for Boom.
Oh, yeah. I like Matt Kent.
Co-writing sounds like probably he's
Matt
just
Kent's
like,
doing it.
Matt he's... Kent's doing it. The character is basically patterned on Keanu Reeves. It looks like Keanu Reeves.
Right.
And it is illustrated by Alessandro Vitti, who is a good artist. It centers on a warrior... who has walked a blood-soaked path across the world for centuries, like the Eternal Warrior from Valiant. In present day, he performs dangerous jobs for the U.S. government in exchange for the truth about his existence. So basically, they keep his secret that he's immortal, and that he's, I guess, his father is a war god. So it's like...
This can't help but sound a little bit like when Otto the bus driver told Bart Simpson about his comic... by day, he's a bus driver. By night, he fights vampires in a post-apocalyptic war zone.
This is correct, yeah. Yeah.
That kind of fits Keanu, who is, like, kind of... has always projected a bit of the good-hearted stoner vibe.
Yeah.
But, like, with a bit of, you know, like, metalhead love of that stuff. our store's resident metalhead, Anna, was like, be still my heart about this. I was kind of like, oh, God. It did not sound good to me.
Me, I'm just, hey, good for Keanu Reeves, good for Boom.
Yeah, that's the thing is, like, I bear no ill will for Keanu Reeves. I wish him well in everything,
yes,
because he seems like the guy who should be running the country and or shooting up the people who are bad people. I'm down with either of those. He seems zen and cool. But yeah, it's not, it doesn't hold any particular interest for me.
Yeah, me neither.
I am kind of amused by it all, though.
Yeah. Our last bit of news is that James Patterson, who is a, like, is he a YA author?
No, I think he's like a, you know, grocery store suspense novelist, is how I'm going to put it, airport suspense novelist. But, like, I think a pretty well-regarded one. But I actually don't know, like, I think he's not in the horror genre, but I think more like mystery suspense things,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. I believe there's a thing, there's a little bit of mini controversy in that he, like, farms out his ideas to other writers and then
takes
credit.
Which I believe kind of must work a little bit like Tom Clancy actually died, I think, right? Didn't he die within the last 10 years?
I have no idea.
I think he did, but, like, even before that, well before that, there had been all these spin-offs of, like, from various video games and things like that where people would, you know, essentially they write Ghost Recon novels or, you know, the newest Rainbow Six or whatever, and it kind of basically became Tom Clancy Presents.
Tom Clancy died 7 years ago.
Yeah, I knew it was recent-ish. But yeah, even before then, he was farming out a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
He, like, would maybe write a new book every once in a while, and then there were 800 books that were, like, the adventures of Splinter Cell guy.
Yep.
Anyway.
The hunt for the second Red October.
But James Patterson does seem to have, like, he's been a huge following, and yep, he seems to be prolific. And he is going to be, what, reinventing the Shadow.
The Shadow, yeah, for novels and films.
A.K.A. the pulp hero who barks death at his enemies with his blazing automatics, who has a cool look in a black...
He knows the evil lurks in men's hearts, he can cloud men's minds.
Yep, and he has agents. His agents are kind, yeah, of random people from throughout the world that kind of fall under his sway, and I've seen them kind of sometimes interpreted, like in the 80s DC comics, where he's, like, more of this creepy manipulator.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like, in the old pulp days, it was just like he's just a super cool badass, and they're all, like, kind of his willing followers.
There was always some cabbie that was his follower.
Yeah, yeah.
What if they reinvent him, he's just, like, a guy who has big tips? He's like, yeah, I got an army of Uber drivers. I gave them all 5 stars. In exchange, they have to get in front of gunfire for me.
You know, honestly, I would kind of be fascinated to see the 80s version that they did that for, at DC, where Howard Chaykin did his own first weirdo miniseries where it jumped into the present, and he had, like, 2 twin sons that had, I think, had been cloned from him while he was away.
Sure.
There was the usual weird Howard Chaykin sex stuff going,
yep,
on.
Sure.
It was super weird. But then afterwards, Andy Helfer and first Bill Sienkiewicz and then Kyle Baker,
yeah,
did like about 20, 25 issues of this very weird, I'm going to say proto-Tarantino crime comic where Shadow would occasionally go up and show up and blow people away with those little mini Uzis that were such a big thing back,
yep,
then. But it was mostly about his agents, and it was all super weird. Like, again, it's very weirdly Pulp Fiction-ish.
Yeah.
Like, they were kind of, they would talk about goofy pop culture stuff, and they didn't all love working for him. Honestly, an Uber driver could fit into this. It wouldn't be the weirdest thing.
And all the music, of course, will be done by Harold Faltermeyer.
Yes. You know, some people, of course, will know Shadow from the 90s movie that they,
yep,
did, which was a fun movie. I think we all
movie.
Like it. Was that
Alec Baldwin?
Alec Baldwin, yeah. That was a decent period piece version with a little bit of tongue in cheek, but a lot of it taken at least seriously enough.
Holds up better than The Phantom.
I've never seen The Phantom. Smash Evil.
Smash Evil. Slam Evil.
Slam Evil. Man, that's even better. It's so good.
You've never seen The Phantom? You got a Phantom pin.
I know, because it's cool. I told you at the time. I'm a poser. Yeah, I don't know how
you're
I like...
a real Phantom fan.
I've also never seen the Green Hornet movie.
Oh, God, don't see the Green Hornet movie.
You know, it was on something a few months ago, and I watched about 30, 40 minutes of it. What a weird tonal monstrosity.
I hated that movie. I couldn't get through it.
They did not know what they were doing.
If I were to rank my pulp movies, Rocketeer would be right at the top,
yep.
Of course.
Rocketeer, Shadow, Phantom.
Then the Shadow, then the Phantom, then nothing,
yeah,
and then the Green Hornet.
Yeah, there's got to be some really...
Dick Tracy go in there somewhere?
Yeah, I like Dick Tracy quite a bit. I mean, it's a comic strip, but it's close enough to pulps.
Yeah.
He guns down his villains sometimes.
Yes.
There's, you know what's weird? I rewatched it recently. There is a scene that's like his montage of getting you know, some payback.
Yeah.
No. It's actually just one of the big action scenes, and he, like, it's the one they showed clips of on the trailer where he's firing that Tommy gun.
Yeah.
He, like, takes out, like, half of Big Boy's crew in one scene. He just guns them to pieces. It's so weird. And it's a quasi-musical, too.
You know what's really weird is that move, that was improvised. He actually killed all those guys.
Yeah, well, you don't see him in acting anymore.
It's true. Warren Beatty, mass murderer.
And yeah, he did become, like he hasn't made a lot of movies since then.
Yeah.
And that was because he was a little on the outs with Hollywood after the mass murder.
After murdering all the extras.
Yeah. They're like, well, we don't really do any, we don't cast him.
You know that song about, you probably think you're so vain that people said it might be about Warren Beatty?
Yeah.
There's a sequel, You're Such a Mass Murderer. You probably think this song is about you.
I thought it was weird for Carly Simon to try it for first hip-hop.
It was odd. It was.
Yeah. But still cool in a way. Oh my god, this has been weird.
Alright, that is our jam-packed news. We're going to take a break for a second, and then we're going to come back and talk about comics for the week. We are talking comics for the week of July 15th and July 22nd.
Yep.
Most of it is this week, although I did real quick want to mention from last week, Empire Number 1. We're going to talk about a lot of Empire this week.
Yes.
But Empire Number 1 did hit last week.
The big Marvel crossover, formally started after kind of three lead-up.
Another issue of Immortal Hulk, which is my favorite Marvel books right now. And the Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Too Long a Sacrifice, which is the first of the Star Trek Deep Space Nine comics.
Yeah, yeah. Is that a mini? I actually didn't read it yet. Is that a miniseries?
Okay. Oh, you haven't read it yet?
Nope.
Oh.
Well, so there was a part of me, because I'm watching the show right now, but I don't know where that's set.
Okay.
I was a little worried I might accidentally find out something if it's set in season 4 and I'm only here on season 2.
I haven't seen all of Deep Space Nine, but I didn't find anything particularly timely. Basically, there's a...
Is it like a murder mystery or
there's
something?
There's a bombing on the station.
Uh-huh.
And Odo is investigating to determine whether or not, like, who's involved in it. So he talks to, you know, Quark, and he talks to, who's the Taylor, the Cardassian Taylor?
Garak.
Yep. And some other characters about exactly what's going on. They're definitely doing sort of like a little bit of a Vietnam War pastiche, you know,
really?
That kind of thing. Well, I mean, you know, the notion of, like, Deep Space Nine was always about being in the middle of a war zone.
A
war that had not particularly ended so much, but, like, was still, like, being resisted and all that kind of thing.
Right.
So, it was an interesting first issue. I like it.
That's cool. I need to go ahead and check it out. I think that it sounds like it would be relatively safe for me.
It is.
As long as
it's
not set after the show.
It is weird to me that the biggest Star Trek fan in the room, you, has not watched it, but I have. It's very strange.
I like to keep people guessing.
all right. So let's talk about this week's stuff.
Oh, did we want to mention the Rolled and Told volume from last week?
Oh, yeah. So last week there was Rolled and Told. Yeah.
Yeah, throughout the whole run of this comic, which is really a sort of a gaming series comic, Rolled and Told was a book that kind of took the place of, like, Dragon Magazine back in the day.
Yeah.
It mixed, it had adventures for D&D, it had springboards and ideas, or, like, how to make your game creepier, or here's how to put together a good soundtrack, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
As well as some little comics and things like that had their kind of ongoing cast of original characters, usually kind of, you know, vignettes from the adventures they were presenting.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they did 12 issues. They were all jam-packed with stuff. And they've done two beautiful hardcovers. So that is done with all of its printing. And hopefully they'll find a new home at some point.
Yeah, Oni Press absorbed Lionforge. And they fired the editor who's responsible for it. And it's kind of a mess of basically not enough money to go around. And kind of a mistake, I think. But... I've run several of the first one, especially if you've got kids that you're DMing for.
Yeah.
Short one-night adventures.
Yep.
There's some fun, like, traps and dungeons, some neat ideas.
Yeah, I saw that they would change it up sometimes, so there'd be, like, here's one that was a very social gathering-y one.
Yeah.
There's one in this I was looking at that's like kind of a cool sea-based adventure that involves having to go down in diving suits under the sea yeah. and like deal with like super crazy weather stuff.
And there's also articles in there, like they did articles for like trinkets and like naming your characters and yep. all kinds of like, it is definitely a Dragon Magazine type thing.
Yeah, and so in other words, it has the kind of old thrill of like, you just want to, like, if you just want to sit down and immerse yourself in some gaming stuff for a little while, even if you're not, like, I used to read Dragon as a kid because my brother got it. I didn't run games. I didn't even play D&D, but I kind of loved reading all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's actually pretty cool reading just on its own.
So before we get into the comics for this week, let's talk about Free Comic Book Day.
Yep.
Sort of weird. Free Comic Book Day was hitting a very weird time this year because basically they print everything in like, February, March.
Right.
And they ship it all out in April.
Right, and it's usually debuts the first week of May.
So, the way this works is the COVID stuff happened, the shutdown happened, basically after everything was printed for Free Comic Book Day. So, like,
right.
they couldn't just say, oh, I guess we're canceled this year, because a lot of it was already printed.
Right.
And a lot of retailers were like, hey, you know, we pay for these books, and it's not a small amount of money we pay for them.
Right.
And usually we make up enough money on a Free Comic Book Day. And we weren't going to have that. We don't want to have a line out the door this year. That's just not that viable. So they've come up with this sort of, like, not perfect, kludgy Free Comic Book summer.
Right.
We're basically just releasing, like, 3 or 4 a week. We're not getting all of them. I don't think any retailers... Some retailers have opted out altogether. But we are getting some of them. And basically what we're doing is we're putting them out for free. And people can come in and grab some of the free comics.
Yeah.
So, if you happen to be in the store, or if you want to come by the store... Come pick up some free comics.
Yep.
So the stuff that's out about right now, both the Marvel offerings are out as of now. So there is a Free Comic Book Day Spider-Man, which has a Black Cat Spider-Man story by Jed McKay and I think maybe Patrick Gleason, or maybe somebody else. Patrick Gleason did some of the art. Oh, Patrick Gleason did the, yeah. So it's Jed McKay and Patrick Gleason. Jed McKay has been doing the Black Cat series we all love.
Yep.
This is a fun short story. And then there is a Carnage Venom story in the back by Donnie Cates and Ryan Stegman,
cool.
who have been doing the Venom book.
Yeah, they've been at the core of the Venom thing for a couple of years now.
Both good teasers for a couple of really good books, and I know there's going to be a Venom Black Cat Spidey crossover coming out, but that's why that's teasing that. Then there's an X-Men offering that is by Hickman and LaRaz, the main X-Men team. That has crazy Hickman X-Men stuff in it. And then an Iron Man story at the back that is the teaser for the new Iron Man book. That is actually the teaser for Dark Ages, the new Tom Taylor crossover that's going to be coming to Marvel.
Okay.
But it is it's got Cap and Iron Man and I think Pepper Potts.
I forgot about that Dark Ages thing. I'm curious about that.
Yeah, me too.
Because he's been kicking some butt over at DC with Deceased. So yeah, I'd be interested to see him visit Marvel on that.
There is the Power Rangers, The Road to Ranger Slayer, which the Ranger Slayer issue came out this week, has beautiful art by Dan Mora. It is sort of a alternate world where the Rangers are bad.
I don't know. Yeah, Nick described it as the Days of Future Past for the Power Rangers. Yeah. And he was quite happy with the issue that hit this week.
The Pink Ranger is like the leader of this group. And
she's called like the Ranger Slayer.
Yeah, she's the Ranger Slayer. But yeah, it's...
But she is a ranger. Must she slay she-self?
I don't... who knows? Anyway, the art is by Dan Mora, is by Gorgeous. I've tried to read it, and I'm like, I can't make heads or tails of this because I don't know Power Rangers at all.
Yeah,
but it was clearly well-written.
Yeah.
Then there's Horizon Zero Dawn, which has very, very nice artwork. That is the futuristic fighting dinosaurs video game that is super popular.
Yep. Which I've been told has quite a good story to it.
Yeah. So there's the comic preview of that. There's a My Little Pony that it starts with season 10. I guess that My Little Pony ended with season 9, and this is the start of the comics picking up those stories.
Yes.
And
so that is going to become like its own comic at this point, or coming up, right?
Street Fighter number 100, which promises Chun-Li versus Ryu, has really nice sort of painty Udon artwork.
Nice.
And All Ages one called Stepping Stones and Max and the Midnights. That is, I recognize the name Lucy Neasley. She's done some good stuff in comics, but it basically looks like sort of a couple of kid-friendly comics with some nice art. And then Valiant's Bloodshot Sampler, tying into the movie, which came out just pre-COVID and then died of a horrible death. But it features a Bloodshot story at the beginning, then an Exo Man War story, and teases Valiant, who have basically put everything on hold till 2021. Decent selection of stuff.
Yeah, no, that sounds pretty good.
All right, let's talk about the week.
All right.
I guess we'll go back and forth, Dave. That's what we usually did when we did this last time.
Sure.
So why don't you pick one?
Because it's on top, I'm going to do this Amazing Spider-Man Sins Rising prelude. Now, I believe this Spider-Man one-shot is going to be just a lead into a Spider-Man story in the main book. It's not like a big crossover, is that what we believe?
That is correct. It is just in the Spider-Man book.
And the Sin Eater, for those that don't know, is like was a character invented in the
80s? Yeah, in the
80s. Who was going around like murdering people related to a specific case, I believe, and ultimately killed one of Spider-Man's notable allies at the time, a police captain named Jean...
DeWolf,
yeah. She was like the tough police captain who had become an unlikely ally of
She was
Peter's.
Not a Wolfman, to be clear.
She and Peter didn't have anything romantic, right?
No.
Let's check it. Anyway, Nick Spencer, who's been writing Spider-Man for some years now, is doing this. And I thought this was an interesting one in that it definitely has like this... It retells the origin in a really kind of creepy way of like the Sin Eater himself, and sort of sets up with a little bit of I'm going to say like unreliable narrator weirdness towards the end, where it's headed now. There's even like some flashbacks that uses straight up art from the comic in the 80s where he killed Jean DeWolf. I gather from the outro. The vibe I get from it, and the vibe they said they were going for, is a little bit of that Kraven's Last Hunt storyline vibe.
Yeah.
Where it's like meant to be, this is not happy-go-lucky Peter Parker. So if you are looking for that, this is not the place to look for it. But if you might want to see if they can pull off something close to or adjacent to a Kraven's Last Hunt storyline with the character, give it a shot.
I want to mention G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, Complete Silence. This is a reprint of issue number 21, The Silent Interlude. And then something they did more recently called 21.5, Silence Between Borders. So the Silent Interlude is a classic G.I. Joe story. It's all silent. There's no words. But basically, the introduction of Storm Shadow, the Cobra Ninja. He brings Scarlet to Cobra Commander, and then she is taken to Destro's castle, at which point Snake Eyes Commando jumps in and fights his way through ninjas to help rescue Scarlet, who is also rescuing herself.
Yeah, it's a big infiltration mission that was like told with some of the best visual storytelling ever in comicdom.
Anyway, it's really good. I reread it. It holds up beautifully. Apparently, the Silence Between Borders, it shows like what happened off, like it's interstitial stuff from the Silent issue. Like, so it shows Snake Eyes making the drop before he jumped, and it shows some of the other stuff. It's basically like an alternate take on it.
Oh, interesting. Okay, I'll have to take a look at it.
But it is weird, and it feels unnecessary.
Yeah.
And it has art by Jeremy Dale, who is just not up to Larry Hama's standards. Larry Hama was actually a pretty talented storyteller as an artist.
He, like, apprenticed, if I'm not mistaken, under Wally Wood, or one of those, like, greats. And I know that those guys were hard-ass taskmasters. They were mean.
So, this second one, honestly, it almost... It's not worth it.
Like, yeah.
The second half of this book is not worth it.
But if you have not read this...
If you've never read the first one, it is a really good action story. And is well worth reading, even though I thought the second part was a little disappointing. What else you got there, Dave?
Let's see. Let's...
Talk Empire?
Yeah, let's go and throw in... there's the second issue of the regular Empire.
Let's just talk all the Empire stuff, because this is the big week for it.
Yeah, that, like... It's when several miniseries, or like one miniseries and two one-shots, maybe?
Two miniseries, one one-shot.
Okay.
Three miniseries, one one-shot.
All right. I was just noticing only one of them says part one of four, and the others just say one on it.
Yeah, but Avengers already had a zero. I think it gets a three-issue mini.
Okay. Maybe. I
don't know. I'm pretty sure.
Anyway,
it's Avengers Fantastic Four Empire, remember? Which is actually just called Empire Number 2. I don't know why they confused this thing. Then there's Empire Avengers Number 1, Empire Lords of Empire, Emperor Hulkling Number 1, and Empire X-Men Number 1.
Yep. And essentially, there's, in the main book, the very quick version is that the Kree and Skrull Empire have united, and they have, like, parked a massive, like, armada off of the Earth's moon, in orbit around Earth's moon, where the famous sort of blue area that's shown up so often in Marvel's history that was, like, a an area where, like, that's the area where the Kree and Skrull had their original contest, right?
Yeah,
to, like, who was going to kind of get to be up. Or no, it was the Katati, the weird plant men, who play a big role in this.
Yep.
Whether they or the Kree would be uplifted by the Skrulls.
Yep.
Anyway, there's all sorts of sort of Game of Thrones-ish power struggles. But the short version is that the Katati have become the once peaceful sort of plant creatures have sort of built themselves up into this potentially, like, galaxy-threatening force.
Yep.
And right or wrong, we don't know fully yet, they the Empires have united to bring them down, kind of bringing a lot of Earth heroes into the fold with them, either for or against this thing. And the would-be emperor of them, he is the emperor, is Teddy...
I forget his last name.
Hulkling of the Young Avengers.
Yeah.
The sort of a reluctant leader, but who does recognize that, you know, at the very least, that he, you know, may be able to do some good in trying to bring these two forever warring empires together.
So we've been kind of digging on this, and I think number two gets into the part that all crossovers hit, which is the, at some point, everybody's just got to fight. And
yeah.
to some extent, I think you and I both did, this is the part that's a little less interesting. And the thing is, there's some solid action in here, there's some good moments.
Yeah.
Captain Marvel gets a hammer in an interesting way. Hulkling has like a magic sword. There's some fun stuff in here. And I actually think the action is well done, but I think to some extent you and I were both like, also, this is just a bunch of people punching each other.
Right. The prelude had sort of smarter, more emotional stories, and I think that's a little bit more what I wanted out of this. Right. But I didn't know that, like, when you've got star empires in conflict... you're going to have some tussles.
but yeah, it's solid enough. Empire Avengers I thought was interesting because it is... It's got an interesting team. It's got, like, the Vision and Black Knight, and it brings in somebody who's never been an Avenger, Dr. Nemesis, which...
Is that from X-Men?
There's a bit here where Mockingbird is driving a car with Wonder Man and Quicksilver. Wonder Man, Quicksilver, and Mockingbird is such a weird B-team, but I love all those characters together.
Yeah, they feel like... Well, several of them have been West Coast Avengers, I guess.
Yeah.
Quicksilver hasn't, but the others were.
Oh, and Kazar's in this thing, too.
Doesn't it take place in the Savage Land?
There's a little bit of that weirdness from Aaron's Avengers.
Jason Aaron's weirdo Avengers,
like,
run.
The garden is their holographic briefing area aboard the Wakandan helicarrier that uses, like...
Oh.
It has magic from Odin.
That's like from Jim Zub... Isn't that from Jim Zub's Agents of Wakanda?
Is it? Stuff? I thought someone was... I don't know. It is written by Jim Zub, so that would make sense.
At least that was my surmise. I know that they didn't. They're not going through with the Agents of Wakanda miniseries tied into this, but yeah, that may just be stuff from his run.
But they use an interesting Marvel character as a plant-based character who's been taken over the Kodatai. That I'm like, that makes sense. And there's also, I think it is in Avengers. It was in one of the books I read this week. They referenced a thing that I remember from like Men in Black. Uh-huh. Remember the movie Men in Black where they're like, look, the aliens are going to vaporize our world just so it doesn't become a problem, like. Like, we have to deal with this, not because we want to help these aliens, but, like, if we don't get this thing back, they're just going to vaporize us because we're one small planet and we threaten the galaxy.
Right.
There's a thing here where they're talking about the Kodatai. They're like, yeah, we're with the Kree and the Skrull right now because they want to fight the Kodatai as well, but if they think they can wipe us out and that'll take care of that problem, they will do it.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that little bit of ambiguity in there.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I feel like Avengers is where they mentioned that. And then there's Hulkling.
Yeah, and Hulkling is... it's kind of the story of, like, when they came to recruit him, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it has the sort of the frontline... The iconic frontline Kree and Skrull fighters. I forget their names.
Roxor and Bel'Dan.
Yeah. They've been around so long. They were there... On the blue area of the moon when Phoenix died.
Yeah.
They were there. And this begins with a little bit of backstory, just for those who don't know, how Hulkling was the secret love child of Captain Marvel, the original Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Mar-Vell.
Yeah.
And a Kree, or I'm sorry, a Skrull... I don't know who
she was.
Skrull
Princess.
Skrull Princess, that's right. I knew it was somebody sort of notable. And it's recounted in these famous storyline from the 80s, right as it's happening, when Galactus did eat the Skrull throne world, which was kind of cool. That was from John Byrne's Fantastic Four run. Anyway, I have not actually read all of this, but what I read I liked. This was written by Chip Zdarsky, who's been doing some great work at Marvel, and co-written by somebody I don't know, Anthony Oliveira.
Yeah.
And basically showed him with his, I guess, his fiancé, right?
Yeah. I love how, like, we don't see a lot of gay relationships in comics, that, especially male gay relationships, especially in Marvel comics.
Yeah.
There's like a full-on kiss here.
Yeah.
Like they are
seen in bed.
Yeah. They definitely are going, pushing the boundaries a little bit, and I like that.
Yep. And I thought it had what I think of as typical of Zdarsky, sort of more thoughtful writing.
Yeah.
Good character introspection. At the same time, you know, a pretty energetic story too.
Oh yeah, it was of the four books this week. It was my favorite.
Yeah, that makes sense. What
and
I read.
Then,
same
and then
here.
There was Empire X-Men, which I'm not big on Hickman's X-Men. This is Hickman doing, bringing his weird stuff into it. There's a thing on Genosha. I don't get too much into it. He does sort of Plants on Zombies riff, which is kind of funny.
Randy, wouldn't you say, though, that probably people who are enjoying the Hickman vibe of all of those X-Men books are probably going to be
down with
it? They
will probably like this.
Yeah.
And I think that's the thing. It's like it's the stealth hook into Empire for those people.
Yeah.
You got one more in your stack, Dave.
Right, one more in my stack, but I actually haven't read it, so I will let you discuss Chew, the spinoff slash sequel to the original Chew.
So we all love Chew.
Spelled slightly differently.
This is C-H-U, which is the last name, Chew.
Right.
This is about Antonia, who is his sister.
Yep.
Who basically is a criminal instead of a cop.
And by the way, for people who don't recall the original Chew, it was a fairly bonkers comic from John Layman that, at least as it began, was a kind of a larger-than-life, sometimes tongue-in-cheek procedural from an alternate future where the bird flu had run amok so badly that chicken was outlawed, and like there were speakeasies, just like booze when booze was outlawed, there were speakeasies for it.
Yep.
And the FDA had, in enforcing it, become this really powerful organization that was like, you know, they would lean on people the way we think of the FBI or CIA as leaning on people.
Yep.
And he worked for them, and then the other weird of many actually strange things in the comic is that he was had these like telepathic powers that manifested specifically around food, which is if he ate something, he got flashes of its sort of lifespan, and that included even if it was like a vegetable, he could imagine, he could like taste the soil where it was grown, and maybe he would get this fleeting impression of the pesticides that had been sprayed on it and all of that stuff. And he would find himself having to do these horrible things, like they'd find a finger or somewhere and he would have to take a chomp out of it, and then he would like know the history of the guy who whose finger it was.
Yep.
And it would help him solve crimes. Now things got very crazy very fast.
There
in
were lots
series.
Of food powers or people. There's a person who could chew like make chocolate weapons. Yep. And there was a guy who was like his nemesis, who was like basically a vampire who would, if he ate someone who was one of the, what they call a sebopath or whatever, he would gain their powers.
Yep.
So by the way, I misspoke. This is not Antonia Chew. This is a new character, Saffron Chew, which is also his sister. This is a big family. John Layman, who is the writer on this, compares this to Better Call Saul and Breaking Bad. Like, this is a prequel. It takes place when Tony Chew is a cop, when the chicken plague has not hit us yet.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And he just now has met his future partner,
guy who gets injured and becomes a cyborg in the first issue.
Yep. And he is, I don't know what he's with. Is he actually with the USDA at this point? I don't know. He's a fed.
Okay.
And they basically get partnered up, and then he's going to be sort of running up against his sister, who is slowly descending into becoming a master criminal. I've read the first three issues of this, because I have previews from Image, and I know that it keeps getting better and better. It is definitely a different vibe than Chew, but it has that same weirdness, and is a different artist, because the artist is off doing his own book, Farmhand. But I like this artist. I think this artist is really good.
Yeah, and I feel like it's close enough to being of a piece with his style.
If you like Chew, you will like Chew.
that actually makes complete sense. And especially because we had, like, when the first trade paperback came out 10 years plus ago, I guess.
Man, that's a while.
We had a big to-do here at the store in our previous location, two yep. doors down,
yep.
Where we had the writer and artist mm-hmm. Both out yep. to do a signing. We had a little secret chicken speakeasy in the back office, and it was mm-hmm. a big thing. So as a result, we actually have always had, I mean, it's been a hit anyway, yeah. but we've always had an especially strong readership for it. And just in case you didn't get the word, the sequel is now starting. If you liked it, you should probably check it out.
There's one other Image book this week called Bliss by Sean Lewis and Caitlin Yarsky. I'm not 100% sure what it's about. It's weird crime, supernatural stuff. But it's got really pretty,
Image book,
it's got
right?
pretty artwork, yeah. And then just quick mention that there's a new issue of Die and a new issue of Chip Zdarsky's Daredevil, which I've been really enjoying, that starts a new Daredevil story arc. That's it for us this week. Nick will not be appearing because we ran out of time. We're not going to talk about Old Guard, Palm Springs. So you do not have to mentally de-edit Dave and re-edit Nick.
Go back and delete the comments where we asked you to do that.
Right, right.
Just delete that from it mentally.
Right.
We don't want to take the time to delete the actual comments, so you have to do it.
It's correct. We all have to throw in. We all have to work together on these COVID times.
We really appreciate you helping us out.
Yes. And anyway, until next time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.